Okay, let's unpack this. Imagine a company that's nearly a century old, has an A-plus financial rating from a top agency, and operates with what it boldly calls a high-tech, high-touch philosophy. Sounds like a rock-solid foundation, doesn't it? But what happens when even the most disciplined, well-regarded players in an industry find themselves facing unprecedented storms? And I mean both literally, with more frequent natural disasters, and figuratively, with complex financial pressures like social inflation. Today, we're taking a deep dive into Selective Insurance Group, Inc., or SIGI, as it's known on the NASDAQ. This isn't just about understanding like a single insurance company. It's a fascinating case study. It shows how a deeply entrenched business, one that's been around since the roaring 20s, navigates a market that's just riddled with these intricate evolving challenges. They're battling rising claims costs and, well, escalating catastrophe losses, all while trying to maintain a long-standing commitment to profitable growth for their shareholders.
Exactly. And our mission today is really to extract the most important nuggets of knowledge from a pretty comprehensive investment analysis of SIGI. We'll explore that tension, between its durable operational strength, those qualities that have allowed it to thrive for decades, and the severe industry-wide headwinds it faces right now. We want to understand if SIGI's aggressive strategies are truly enough. I mean, are they enough to outpace these persistent loss cost trends? And how does its competitive moat, that sort of protective barrier around its business, hold up in this rapidly changing landscape? By the end, you'll have hopefully a clear, nuanced picture of what makes this company tick, the current challenges testing its resilience, and what its path forward looks like.
Absolutely. And to get there, we'll be looking at their unique, high-tech, high-touch business model. We'll delve into the wild world of property and casualty, or P&C, industry dynamics. It's quite something. We'll track their financial roller coaster over the past few years, examine their growth strategies, explore how they manage their money, and critically assess the risks and opportunities that truly define their current investment story. Get ready to connect some dots and uncover some really compelling insights. So let's start at the very beginning, right? By laying the foundation for Selective Insurance Group. This is a New Jersey-based holding company, first founded way back in 1926. Think about that for a moment, nearly a century of continuous operation. That kind of longevity isn't just, a fun historical fact. It speaks volumes about a company's deep institutional knowledge and its ability to adapt and endure through countless economic cycles, market shifts. Throughout its almost 100-year history, SIGI has built this reputation for disciplined underwriting, which is basically their skill in assessing and pricing risk and serious financial strength. In fact, it ranks as the 34th largest P&C group in the U.S. based on its 2023 net premiums written. And here's another impressive detail that truly underpins their credibility. They've held an A-plus superior rating from AM Best for over 90 years. That's remarkable.
Yeah, the significance of that A-plus rating from AM Best really can't be overstated, especially for an insurance company, in a volatile market. For you, the policyholder, it builds immense confidence that Selective has the financial wherewithal to pay claims even after a major catastrophe or a period of unexpected losses. It's a reassurance that their promise to you is backed by solid capital. That's key. And for its distribution partners, those independent agents who sell their products, it signals a stable, reliable partner, someone they can confidently place their clients' business with, knowing the insurer will be there for the long haul. This consistent A-plus rating is, well, it's a cornerstone of their market position. It underpins the trust and credibility they've painstakingly built over decades. It's a fundamental strength in a business that is, at its heart, built on promises and, crucially, the ability to fulfill them.
That distinction is crucial, absolutely. And to really understand how SIGI operates and manages its diverse portfolio of risks, we need to break down its business into three distinct insurance segments. Each one plays a unique role and contributes differently to the overall enterprise. The first, and by far the largest segment, is Standard Commercial Lines. It makes up about 79% of their net premiums written. You think of this as their operational core, really, the bread and butter of their business. They provide a comprehensive suite of property and casualty products covering things like general liability, commercial auto, workers' compensation, property damage, you name it. And it's for a diverse range of commercial clients. These aren't just massive corporations. They serve everyone from small and mid-sized businesses to nonprofits, even local government agencies. What's particularly compelling about their Standard Commercial Lines, I think, is their focus on niche expertise. They've developed specialized underwriting knowledge in specific markets, allowing them to better assess and price risk for businesses like contractors, private schools, manufacturers, and even automotive repair shops. This deep understanding lets them offer tailored solutions that maybe larger, less specialized insurers might just overlook. Their strategy here is all about disciplined organic growth, growing market share within existing territories, and carefully expanding geographically. They're not just, you know, throwing darts on a map. They added 5 new states in 2024 alone, bringing their total to 35 states plus DC. And they have concrete plans to enter Kansas, Montana, and Wyoming in the next couple of years. The ultimate goal, it seems, is to eventually achieve a near national footprint, which offers both diversification and increased market opportunity. Okay, next up, we have excess and surplus, or E&S, lines. This accounts for about 12% of their net premiums written. This segment is a key engine for growth and profitability for them, and it's where things get a bit more, let's say, adventurous in the insurance world. Through their subsidiary, Mesa Underwriters Specialty Insurance Company, or MUSIC, kind of a fun acronym, they provide coverage for commercial clients with unique, unusual, or higher risk exposures, the kind that might not fit into the standard, highly regulated insurance market. Imagine a company building a new experimental drone, or maybe a concert venue with unusual liability risks. That's the kind of business that might find its home in E&S. They operate nationwide in this specialized space. Their strategy here is to actively invest in efficiency, develop new specialized products tailored to emerging risks, and improve operational scalability. This allows them to quickly capitalize on the profitable growth opportunities that pop up in this complex, less regulated market where strong underwriting skills are just paramount. And finally, their standard personal lines, making up about 9% of their net premiums written. This segment, while smaller, is actually undergoing a pretty significant strategic transformation, which is a big story for the company right now. They offer personal auto and homeowners insurance in 15 states, and they also participate in the National Flood Insurance Program, selling flood coverage in all 50 states. But here's the strategic pivot. Management is actively repositioning this business to focus intently on the mass affluent customer segment. This is a demographic that, you know, typically values comprehensive coverage and superior service more than simply the lowest price, which aligns much better with Selective's overall emphasis on strong client relationships and disciplined underwriting. In 2024 and 2025, they've taken deliberate and, frankly, aggressive actions to prioritize profitability over simply growing volume in this segment. This means they're implementing aggressive rate increases, tempering new business growth. Basically, they're being much pickier about who they insure, and even accepting lower policy retention rates. Moving forward, they'll only pursue growth in states where they can meet specific, pretty stringent profitability objectives.
Right. And if we connect these dots, you can really see how these three segments, despite their different focuses, contribute to Siggy's diversified risk profile and overall strategic objectives. The standard commercial lines provide that stable, growing core, leveraging that niche expertise you mentioned. E&S offers higher margin growth in a specialized, less commoditized area. And that repositioning in personal lines, well, even though it means deliberately shrinking their policy count and sacrificing some top-line revenue in the short term, it's a highly disciplined and, I'd say, brave move for long-term health. What's truly insightful here, I think, is that this aggressive pivot in personal lines is a bold strategic bet against the industry's sort of default growth-at-all-costs mindset. It reveals a management team prioritizing true economic profit over mere market share, a rare and incredibly important signal for you, the investor, about their long-term health. It means they're willing to make tough, maybe even unpopular decisions today for a healthier, more profitable tomorrow, and that's a hallmark of strong stewardship.
That really drives home their commitment to profitability over volume, doesn't it? And that brings us to what I think is Siggy's core differentiator, their high-tech, high-touch competitive advantage. This isn't just some catchy phrase they use. It's fundamental to how they operate and probably why they've been able to navigate challenging markets for so long. Their primary distribution channel, for instance, is through a carefully selected network of about 1,300 high-quality independent agencies. They often refer to this as their franchise value model, because it's built on these deep, collaborative, and localized relationships between the company and these agent partners. These agents aren't just salespeople. They act as trusted advisors to their clients, which creates incredible loyalty and a strong, sticky bond that's, frankly, hard to break. Now, let's look at how high touch works in practice. It's really embodied by their unique field model. They strategically place empowered underwriting, claims, and safety management specialists in local offices. This means they are literally close to their agents and customers, operating within the communities they serve. This proximity isn't just, you know, convenient. It enables much faster decision-making, more tailored and accurate risk assessment because they understand local conditions, and a higher level of personalized service. Imagine needing a claim resolved or a complex policy tailored, having a local expert who truly knows your business. Well, that can make all the difference. It's that local personal connection that truly sets them apart. It's almost like bringing back the era of the friendly neighborhood insurance agent, just with a supercomputer quietly humming in the background. And then the high-tech side comes in through their ongoing, pretty substantial investments in technology. This isn't just for show. It's designed to powerfully support their frontline employees and, crucially, to enhance the customer and agent experience. For example, they use sophisticated, data-driven tools for risk selection and pricing. This allows them to be incredibly precise in identifying and rating profitable business, avoiding unnecessary risk. They also have digital platforms like the My Selective Online portal and a mobile app that provides 24/7 account access, policy management, claim submission, all that good stuff. For commercial clients, there's an online risk management center that offers valuable resources for safety and loss prevention. They're even actively using generative AI to improve internal processes, streamline workflows, and accelerate decision-making. That shows their commitment to being on the cutting edge while reinforcing those core human connections.
Right. This super regional operating model you've described creates a truly distinct and, I think, powerful competitive advantage. When you look at it, you see that Citi is effectively carving out a unique space in the market, positioning itself strategically right in the middle. Against large national carriers, for example, like Travelers, Citi's localized decision-making and those deep personal agent relationships provide a level of service, agility, and responsiveness that those giants often struggle to replicate at scale. They just can't be as nimble or as personally connected with individual local businesses, you know? On the other hand, when you compare them to smaller regional insurers, Citi possesses significantly more financial resources, advanced tech capabilities like that AI integration you mentioned, and a growing multi-state footprint that smaller players simply lack. They don't have the muscle to offer such a broad range of specialized products or invest as heavily in innovation and data analytics. So this middle ground positioning, large enough to be a sophisticated tech-enabled operator, but localized enough for superior personalized service, that's the foundation of their competitive moat. And for you, the listener, a competitive moat essentially means something that makes it very hard for other companies to take away their business. It's what gives them durable pricing power, more stable cash flows, and greater resilience in their market, making their investment story more robust over the long term.
That's a fantastic articulation of how they've built that protective moat. But, no company, no matter how well fortified, operates in a vacuum, especially not in the P&C insurance industry. So let's zoom out a bit and set the stage for the broader industry environment, looking at 2024 and 2025. After several tough years, the P&C market has seen a welcome profitability rebound. The industry-wide combined ratio, which is that critical measure of underwriting profitability, basically combining claims costs and operating expenses relative to premiums, where anything below 100% is good news and underwriting profit well, it improved significantly to 94% in 2024. That was the best performance in over 15 years. Pretty impressive. This recovery was largely driven by cumulative rate increases insurers implemented over the past few years, alongside some moderating inflationary pressures on repair costs and materials. The forecasts for 2025 remain favorable, predicting the industry combined ratio to stay profitable, somewhere in the range of 98.5% to 99.0%. However, alongside this profitability, we're also seeing moderating premium growth.
After a period of near double-digit annual gains from 2021 to 2023, largely fueled by those rising rates, premium growth is expected to decelerate. It's forecast around 8% in 2024, and it's slowing further to about 5.5% in 2025. This slowdown is mainly due to increased competition as those underwriting margins have been restored, enticing more insurers to kind of chase market share again.
Yeah, what's fascinating here is how these broader trends create both tailwinds and headwinds for individual players like Citi. The overall improvement in industry profitability is definitely a positive, offering a more stable backdrop. But the moderating growth and persistent challenges mean that not all companies will benefit equally, right? Some will struggle to maintain their footing. This is precisely where a company's specific strategies, that high-tech, high-touch model we talked about, and its competitive advantages really come into play. They determine who thrives in a more competitive environment.
Exactly. So let's dive into some of those specific pressures and advantages that are shaping this environment, starting with inflation. While headline consumer inflation has eased somewhat, P&C insurers face some much more specific and, frankly, stubborn inflationary pressures. Here's where it gets really interesting, and we introduce a term called social inflation. This describes the rising costs of insurance claims that result not from the direct cost of repairs, but from increased litigation, broader definitions of liability, and crucially, larger and more frequent jury awards. This is a significant and insidious headwind, especially for longer-tail casualty lines like general liability and commercial auto, where the full cost of a claim might not be known for years, maybe even a decade.
Right. To put social inflation into perspective for you, imagine a commercial auto accident from, say, 5 years ago. Initially, an insurer might have estimated the ultimate payout for injuries and damages at, let's say, $1 million. But due to evolving legal precedents, a shift in public sentiment towards corporate accountability, maybe more plaintiff-friendly juries, that same claim might now settle for $5 million, or even more. That unexpected jump in cost years after the incident, that's the essence of social inflation. It's incredibly difficult to accurately estimate the ultimate cost of a liability claim today when a jury 5 or 10 years from now might award a vastly larger sum than historical averages would suggest. This uncertainty puts immense pressure on reserving practices, which is something we'll definitely see played out starkly in Sagit's recent financials.
And beyond social inflation, there's still economic inflation at play, even though it's easing a bit. Costs for construction materials and auto parts, while moderating, remain elevated compared to historical levels. This directly impacts property and auto physical damage claims. So even if a claim isn't hit by one of those nuclear verdicts, the actual cost to replace a roof or repair a vehicle is simply higher than it used to be. Then we have catastrophe losses. The increasing frequency and severity of natural catastrophes, things like severe convective storms, hurricanes, wildfires, continue to be a major source of earnings volatility for the entire industry. Climate change is seen as an exacerbating factor here, making it much harder for actuaries and risk modelers to accurately predict and price future catastrophe events. This leads to more uncertainty in reinsurance pricing and availability, too. It's a constant recalibration effort. But on the flip side, we have interest rates, which have actually been a significant tailwind for the industry lately. Higher rates mean insurers can reinvest their vast cash flows from maturing bonds and new premiums into higher-yielding securities.
This substantially boosts their net investment income, which is a critical component of their overall profitability. Swiss Re, for example, forecasts industry investment yields to rise to 3.7% in 2024 and 4.1% in 2025. That provides a powerful offset to some of those underwriting pressures.
Absolutely. If we connect this to the bigger picture, you can see how insurers are in this constant, intricate battle to price correctly against these ever-shifting sands. Social inflation, in particular, is so insidious for those long-tail lines because the claims can take years, sometimes decades, to settle. It's incredibly difficult to accurately estimate the ultimate cost of a liability claim today when a jury 5 or 10 years down the road might award a vastly larger sum than historical averages would suggest. That uncertainty, as you said, puts immense pressure on reserving practices. We'll see that clearly in SIGA's recent financials. It really is a true hydra-headed monster where solving one problem might just reveal another one.
Given these complex dynamics, it's crucial to understand SIGA's competitive positioning. And to give you some context, we can compare them to a curated peer group. We've got the Hanover Insurance Group, THG. They're a regional competitor with a similar super-regional focus, so that gives us a good apples-to-apples comparison. Then there's Kinsale Capital Group, KNSL, a high-growth, pure-play E&S insurer. They act as a kind of best-in-class benchmark for SIGI's own E&S operations. And finally, the Travelers Companies, DRV, a large national P&C carrier that competes across many of SIGI's product lines, providing a contrast to that super-regional model.
Yeah, and this raises an important question. How did SIGA actually stack up against these peers, especially in that challenging recent period of 2024? A comparison reveals some pretty stark contrasts, truly underscoring the severity of the underwriting challenges SIGA faced. In 2024, SIGA's performance was significantly tested. They reported a combined ratio of 103.0% and an operating return on equity, or ROE, of only 7.1%. Now, this contrasted sharply with its peers. The Hanover, for instance, showed a much stronger ex-catastrophe combined ratio of 88.4% and operating ROE of 15.8% for the full year 2024. Kinsale, operating in that highly profitable E&S market, delivered an exceptional 76.4% combined ratio and an impressive 32.3% ROE in 2024. Even a large national carrier like Travelers demonstrated strong profitability in Q2 2025, posting a 90.3% combined ratio. So this peer comparison highlights that while the industry generally improved, SIGA's specific reserving actions for prior years created a significant drag on its reported profitability, making its 2024 performance stand out, well, for the wrong reasons.
So what does this all mean for SIGA, especially when we consider the market's current state? It means they're not just passively taking hits, they're actively fighting back with their pricing strategy. The P&C market currently has what we call a bifurcated cycle. What that basically means is the hard market in property lines, which saw big rate increases for years, is starting to moderate as profitability returns and competition increases. But on the flip side, Casualty lines, hammered by those social inflation trends we discussed, remain under intense pressure. That necessitates continued strong rate increases, and Sigi is actively exercising its pricing power. In the second quarter of 2025, the company achieved overall renewal pure price increases of 9.9%. Impressive. This was led by a strong 8.9% in their core standard commercial line segment and an even more aggressive 19.0% in standard personal lines. That directly reflects that deliberate strategy to improve profitability in that particular book of business. They're clearly saying, look, we're not going to underprice our risk just to gain market share.
Now, let's really get into the numbers, because they truly tell a story of both resilience and recent strain. We're going to look at Selective's financial and operational summary over the past 5 years, from 2020 through the first half of 2025. First, let's talk about net premiums written, or NPW. This is essentially the revenue generated from selling new insurance policies and renewing existing ones. We've seen consistent growth here, going from an estimated $3.7 billion in 2020 to a robust $4.6 billion in 2024. This growth has been driven by their organic expansion strategy, which we touched on earlier. In 2024, their standard commercial lines accounted for the lion's share at $3.66 billion. Standard personal lines contributed $416.7 million, and excess and surplus lines added a significant $555.6 million. It shows how each segment contributes to that overall top-line expansion. Next, the combined ratio, as a check. As we mentioned, this is a crucial measure of underwriting profitability. Sigi had a historical strength here, often posting combined ratios well below 100%. However, in 2024, it saw a sharp deterioration, jumping to 103.0%. That means they were losing money on underwriting.
But here's the good news and a critical point for investors. In the first half of 2025, we've seen a marked improvement. The combined ratio fell back to 98.2%. That's a significant shift back into underwriting profitability, suggesting their corrective actions are starting to take hold. Finally, their net investment income after tax. This has shown consistent and strong growth, especially recently. It reached an impressive $197.0 million in the first half of 2025 alone. That's a big number.
Yeah. The table truly tells a story of both resilience and recent strain. It really does. While the consistent growth in net premiums written shows their underlying business expansion and market acceptance, that sharp deterioration in the combined ratio in 2024 really highlights the significant industry headwinds and their specific reserving actions. Crucially, it emphasizes the critical role of investment income during periods of underwriting volatility. When the core insurance business struggles to make a profit from premiums alone, a robust, conservatively managed investment portfolio like Sigi's can step in to provide stability and still generate overall positive earnings. It's a vital second engine for profitability.
Let's do a deep dive into that underwriting profitability, specifically the combined ratio, because that's where the most significant challenges have been recently. The primary driver of that 2024 underperformance was a substantial increase in the loss ratio, the amount paid out in claims relative to premiums. The 103.0% combined ratio for that year actually included 7.1 percentage points, or a staggering $311 million, of unfavorable prior year casualty reserve development.
Okay, expert, for those less familiar, what exactly does unfavorable prior year reserve development mean, and why is it such a red flag?
Sure. Think of it this way. When an insurer writes a policy, they're making a promise for the future, right? And they estimate how much money they'll need to set aside to pay out for claims that haven't even happened yet, or maybe haven't fully settled. This reserve is their best guess at the time. Unfavorable prior year reserve development means they looked back at claims from, say, 2022 or 2023, and realized they had originally underestimated how much those claims would ultimately cost. So they had to go back and set aside more money for those past promises than they initially thought. It's like finding out your credit card bill from last month was actually much higher than you estimated, and now you have to play catch up with a much larger payment this month. For investors, this is a red flag because it suggests that their initial pricing and reserving assumptions might have been too optimistic. It directly erodes current profitability and raises questions about the accuracy of their underwriting models. It means current earnings are being used to cover past mistakes, essentially.
Right. And this trend, though at a lesser rate, continued into the first half of 2025, contributing another 2.1 points of unfavorable development. Management has explicitly attributed these reserve charges to social inflation and higher than anticipated claim severity. It's clearly a constant battle to get ahead of that curve. Okay, but on a more positive note, throughout this period of loss ratio volatility, Sigi has demonstrated pretty solid expense ratio discipline. Their expense ratio, which covers all their operational costs like salaries, technology, commissions, rent, etc., has remained relatively stable. It hovered around 31.8% in 2024 and 31.2% in the first half of 2025. This indicates good control over their underwriting and acquisition costs, although you might see slight increases due to those ongoing investments in technology and their geographic expansion efforts. But it shows they're not letting general operating costs spiral even when other parts of the business are stressed.
That raises an important question, though. Can SIGA truly get ahead of social inflation, or is this just a hydra-headed monster they'll keep battling? The significant reserve charges are a stark reminder of how challenging it is to price those long-tail casualty risks accurately. For you, the listener, prior year reserve development is such a critical metric because it tells you whether an insurer has adequately reserved for its past obligations. If they consistently have to strengthen reserves, it suggests they are underestimating future claim costs, which directly erodes profitability and raises serious questions about their underwriting accuracy. Its stabilization is perhaps the most important signal that management has finally gotten a handle on these escalating loss trends.
Okay, so while there's been some turbulence on the underwriting side, their investment portfolio performance has truly been a beacon of strength. Let's shift to that positive story. In terms of asset quality and composition, as of year-end 2024, SIGA managed a substantial $9.7 billion investment portfolio, and this portfolio is impressively conservatively positioned. A massive 92% is in high-quality, A-plus rated, fixed-income securities and short-term investments. That conservative stance minimizes credit risk, the risk that bond issuers might default, and provides a predictable, reliable stream of income. That's exactly what you want when your underwriting business faces volatility. And this conservative positioning, especially in a rising interest rate environment, has led to a significant income contribution. Net investment income is a substantial and growing part of SIGA's overall earnings. Benefiting from that higher interest rate environment we discussed earlier, after-tax net investment income rose an impressive 18% year-over-year in the second quarter of 2025, reaching $101 million just in that quarter.
This powerful earnings stream actually generated an impressive 13.0 annualized points of return on equity, or ROE, in the quarter. It effectively offset the small underwriting loss they experienced and drove positive net income for the company overall. It truly highlights that dual engine of insurance company profitability.
Absolutely. This segment has indeed been a crucial buffer, especially during those challenging underwriting periods. It underscores the dual nature of an insurance company's profitability. It comes from both underwriting results and the returns generated from its investment portfolio. In challenging underwriting cycles, a strong, conservatively managed investment portfolio, like SIGI's, can absolutely be the difference between profit and loss. It demonstrates a resilience that isn't solely dependent on perfect pricing in a volatile market, offering a vital layer of financial stability. It's like having a reliable generator when the main power grid is experiencing brownouts, right?
Good analogy. Now let's look at the company's overall profitability and returns, starting with return on equity, ROE. Which gives us a sense of how much profit the company generates for each dollar of shareholder equity. After a strong 14.3% ROE in 2023, the metric halved to 7.0% in 2024. That directly reflects those underwriting challenges and reserve strengthening actions. However, we've seen a recovery in the second quarter of 2025, with the annualized ROE reaching 10.7%, thanks to improving underwriting results and continued strong investment income. It's also worth noting that over a trailing 10-year period, SIGI has consistently outperformed its peer group average in ROE. That suggests a resilient business model that typically generates strong returns over the long term, despite recent blips. In terms of book value growth, despite that volatility in GAAP earnings, SIGI has continued to generate underlying value for shareholders. This is evidenced by the consistent increase in its book value per share, which is basically the company's assets minus its liabilities, divided by the number of shares outstanding, a key metric for insurers.
As of June 30, 2025, book value per share stood at $52.09, which is a solid 16% increase from the prior year. So the underlying value is still growing.
Right. While ROE can be volatile, especially in an industry facing such intense headwinds right now, the consistent growth in book value per share is a testament to the underlying value creation, even during periods of stress. It tells you that the company is still building shareholder equity, effectively growing its net asset value, which is a fundamental measure of long-term wealth creation for investors. It means the assets they hold, net of liabilities, are steadily growing, which is a really reassuring sign of intrinsic value being built year after year, even if reported earnings jump around a bit.
So we've seen the headwinds, but how is SIGI positioning itself not just to survive, but to truly thrive in this turbulent environment? What's their long-game strategy for growth? Well, SIGI isn't just reacting to these challenges. They have a clear, proactive plan for the future. Historically, they've shown impressive growth history, achieving a 9.4% compound annual growth rate in net premiums, written from 2015 to 2024. They grew their top line from approximately $2.5 billion to $4.6 billion in that period.
And all of this has been organic, meaning it came from internal efforts and market share gains, not through buying other companies. That's a significant achievement and really speaks to the strength of their core operations and agent relationships. Looking forward, their organic growth initiatives are multi-pronged and deeply integrated into their strategy. Geographic expansion is a primary lever for their flagship Standard Commercial Lines segment. Their methodical goal is to establish a near-national footprint to better compete and diversify their risk geographically, reducing concentration in any one area prone to specific catastrophes, for example. They've been very deliberate about it, adding 13 states since 2017, and they plan to continue this expansion into places like Kansas, Montana, and Wyoming. This measured approach ensures they can replicate their high-tech, high-touch model effectively in new markets without stumbling. They also aim for deeper market penetration within existing territories. They have long-term targets to increase their share of wallet to 12% and capture a 25% market share among their appointed independent agents. This involves strengthening those agency relationships and providing tools that make it easier for agents to place more business with Selective, basically becoming the go-to carrier for their best agents. And of course, they're pursuing E&S lines expansion, opportunistically growing their music subsidiary's capabilities and product offerings as new unique risks emerge in the marketplace. Technology and digital transformation are also central to their high-tech, high-touch operating model and are key enablers of future growth and efficiency. They are leveraging advanced technology, including general-purpose and industry-trained generative AI solutions, to improve internal effectiveness, speed up decision-making for underwriters, and boost agency satisfaction by making interactions more seamless. For customers and agents, they continue to enhance digital platforms like MySelective and the Online Risk Management Center. Here's a tangible example of this in action. In March 2025, they announced they were adding Ting Fire Prevention Technology to their service lineup for policyholders. This is a smart device designed to detect and avoid electrical fire risks in homes and businesses. It offers a value-added service that also proactively reduces claims. It's a neat example of using tech to enhance both customer experience and risk mitigation. Smart stuff. It's also worth noting their acquisition strategy, or perhaps lack thereof. The available research indicates that Sigi's strategic focus is overwhelmingly on organic growth. There's no mention of significant recent merger or acquisition activity. This suggests that management prioritizes the meticulous execution of its internal growth initiatives and disciplined culture over the integration risks and cultural clashes that often plague companies relying heavily on M&A for growth. This is a deliberate choice that, while perhaps slower, often builds more sustainable value in the long run.
That's a great point. This overwhelming focus on organic growth, strongly supported by technology, is a powerful signal of management's confidence in their core model. It suggests they truly believe their existing high-tech, high-touch approach, combined with strategic geographic and market expansion, is robust enough to drive profitable growth for years to come. It also allows them to avoid the significant integration risks and cultural clashes that often plague companies relying heavily on acquisitions. That can be a real differentiator in the long run, avoiding those messy integrations. They're basically betting on the strength of their own engine, rather than trying to bolt on someone else's.
That's a great point about avoiding M&A risks. Okay, let's move on to how Selective manages its capital and financial resources. They employ what they describe as a disciplined and balanced approach, which is absolutely crucial for an insurer. One key aspect is their dividend policy. The company has an impressive track record here, boasting 11 consecutive years of dividend increases. They've got a 5-year compound annual growth rate of 10.56%. The annual dividend per share has grown from 94 cents in 2020 to $1.43 in 2024, and now stands at an annualized rate of $1.52 per share for 2025. Crucially, they maintain a very conservative dividend payout ratio, which is only 24.5% of earnings as of mid-2025.
Right. And that conservative 24.5% payout ratio isn't just a number. It's a strong signal of management's priorities. It means SIGIT is retaining a significant portion of its earnings, roughly 3/4, to fuel that organic growth we discussed, and also to act as a crucial cushion against unexpected market shocks and those reserve strengthening requirements we talked about. It's really a hallmark of a financially prudent insurer. It distinguishes them from those who might chase short-term appeal with higher but maybe less sustainable payouts. It shows a commitment to long-term financial health over immediate gratification for shareholders, which is usually a good sign.
Right. In addition to dividends, SIG uses share repurchase programs as a flexible tool to return capital to shareholders. The board has authorized repurchases of up to $100 million of common stock, with about $84.2 million remaining under that authorization at the end of 2023. These repurchases are opportunistic.
meaning management decides when to buy back shares based on market conditions, typically when they believe the stock is undervalued. It's another lever they can pull. Their capital structure is also quite conservative. As of year-end 2024, their debt-to-capital ratio was a prudent 14.0%. This low level of leverage provides significant financial flexibility and limits their exposure to rising interest rates on borrowed money. In February 2025, they further bolstered their financial position by closing a $400 million offering of senior notes, which enhanced their liquidity to support future growth and manage potential volatility without over-leveraging. And of course, their capital adequacy is continually affirmed by that A-plus superior rating from AM Best, which they've proudly held for over 90 years. Can't emphasize that enough.
Absolutely. A conservative dividend payout ratio, low leverage, and strong capital ratings are crucial for an insurer. It really signals immense financial resilience and a commitment to shareholders, even when the underwriting environment gets tough. This balanced approach to capital allocation, prioritizing profitable growth, maintaining a robust balance sheet, and then returning excess capital is key to long-term stability. It's something you, as a discerning observer, should look for in any financial institution. It suggests management is thinking not just about the next quarter, but about the next decade.
Okay, we've touched on some of the industry challenges, but let's take a deeper dive into the specific recent developments and industry headwinds that impacted SIGI between, say, 2022 and 2024. This period has been particularly challenging for the entire P&C industry, and Selective has certainly felt the brunt of these forces. The impact of inflation has been the most significant headwind, no question. Once again, social inflation has been explicitly cited by management as the primary driver of the company's recent underwriting challenges. They've spoken openly about elevated severities due to social inflation as the reason for significant unfavorable prior year casualty reserve development. This became especially acute in 2024 when the company took that substantial $311 million charge to strengthen casualty reserves. That was followed by an additional $100 million charge in the fourth quarter of that year. Ouch. The pressure continued into 2025 with a further $45 million reserve strengthening in the second quarter. These actions directly address those higher-than-expected claims costs in lines like general liability and commercial auto, driven by increased litigation and larger settlements. And beyond that, economic inflation, while moderating, has had lingering effects. Elevated costs for auto parts, skilled labor, construction materials. They continue to put upward pressure on claims severity in commercial auto and property lines, even without the social element. Then there are the catastrophic weather events. Increased frequency and severity of these events have also been a significant factor. In 2024, elevated catastrophe losses contributed 6.5 percentage points to their combined ratio, directly contributing to the year's underwriting loss. While catastrophe losses in the second quarter of 2025 were lower than the prior year period, 6.7 points compared to 8.4 points, they remain a material component of the company's loss experience and a key source of earnings volatility. Their geographic concentration in the eastern, midwestern, and southwestern U.S. exposes them to both hurricanes and severe convective storms, making accurate weather modeling a constant challenge. However, there's a clear positive here: rising interest rates. The sharp increase in interest rates by the Federal Reserve has been a clear net positive for Selective. The impact is most evident in the strong performance of its investment portfolio. Those higher yields available on new investments have driven substantial growth in net investment income, which has served as that crucial source of earnings and a powerful offset to the pressures on the underwriting side of the business. It's been a saving grace during these turbulent times, you could say.
Definitely. If we connect this to the bigger picture, these are the persistent external forces that management HHS has to respond to. For you, that listener, the key question is really how effective have those responses been and how quickly can they truly turn the ship? It's a testament to the industry's complexity that even with skilled management and a disciplined approach, these macro trends, particularly social inflation, can significantly impact profitability. It's a continuous battle for every insurer out there.
So, how is management responding? They've implemented a series of decisive strategic initiatives to counter these pressures. First, they're pursuing aggressive pricing, actively seeking and achieving rate increases that they believe will exceed expected loss cost trends. That 9.9% overall renewal pure price increase in Q2 2025 is a clear example of their willingness to push for the rates they need. Second, they're undertaking significant underwriting refinements. This means tightening guidelines, especially in those challenged casualty lines. It includes carefully managing policy limits, refining coverage terms, and strategically shifting their business mix towards better performing classes and geographies. They're just being much more selective about the risks they take on. Third, they're enhancing their claims management. This means an increased focus on cases likely to go to trial, particularly those impacted by social inflation. They're using sophisticated tools like jury consultants and conducting mock trials, holding internal roundtables, basically trying to better assess and manage litigation risk, trying to mitigate those nuclear verdicts.
And finally, that dramatic strategic repositioning in personal lines is a major step. They are deliberately shrinking their policy count in that segment to focus on the more profitable mass affluent market, clearly prioritizing margin over sheer volume. They are not chasing growth at any cost there.
And that willingness to make tough decisions, like deliberately sacrificing top-line growth and personal lines for the sake of profitability, well, that's a hallmark of strong management. It really is. It demonstrates a commitment to long-term value creation over short-term vanity metrics, like just growing premiums. It tells you they're not afraid to take a hit on growth figures today if it means building a healthier, more profitable company for tomorrow. It signals a disciplined, shareholder-focused approach to running the business, even when it might be counterintuitive to some market observers.
Right. And a company is only as strong as its leadership. So let's evaluate management quality and corporate governance at Selective. The management team seems to boast deep industry experience and a blend of perspectives. CEO John J. Marchioni has been with Selective since 1998, working his way up before becoming CEO in 2020. That kind of long tenure provides strategic continuity and a deep understanding of the company's culture. The broader executive team also includes experienced external hires, like CFO Patrick S. Brennan, who joined in 2024 from Progressive, and Chief Claims Officer Paul Cush, who brought extensive experience from ProSight Specialty Insurance. This blend of long-serving internal leaders and fresh external perspectives is often a powerful combination, bringing both stability and new ideas. Their strategic vision and execution are clearly centered on that high-tech, high-touch model and disciplined, profitable growth. Their methodical geographic expansion strategy has been successful. And critically, in the face of recent adversity, their response to social inflation has been decisive and transparent. Management has openly communicated the challenges and implemented concrete actions, aggressive pricing, underwriting adjustments, that personal lines pivot. Their willingness to sacrifice short-term growth to restore long-term profitability is a key indicator of disciplined operational management, showing they're not afraid to make hard choices. Moving to corporate governance practices, Selective maintains a robust framework designed to ensure accountability and ethical conduct. Their board of directors is composed of a majority of independent directors and has a mandatory retirement age of 72 to facilitate board refreshment and bring in fresh perspectives. The director selection process actively seeks diversity in skills, experiences, and backgrounds, ensuring candidate pools include individuals of diverse gender, race, and culture. The board has a well-defined committee structure for oversight, including dedicated committees for audit, risk, compensation, and finance. They also emphasize a culture of high ethical standards with a code of conduct, mandatory ethics training for all employees, and confidential ethics channels for reporting concerns. Seems pretty thorough.
Yeah, this level of experience combined with a clear strategic vision and a commitment to strong governance provides crucial stability, especially when a company is navigating such significant industry headwinds. It's about accountability and long-term stewardship. For you, the listener, robust governance provides confidence that the company is being run in a responsible and ethical manner with clear lines of oversight. That's foundational to any investment decision. It's a quiet strength that often goes unnoticed until a crisis hits.
Now, let's talk about the risks you, as an informed observer, need to understand. An investment in Selective Insurance Group, like any company, involves exposure to several inherent risks in the P&C industry. The most significant near-term risk, in our view, is underwriting and reserving risk. The process of estimating loss reserves is inherently uncertain, as we've discussed. The primary concern is that the substantial reserve strengthening actions taken in 2024 and 2025 might still prove insufficient to cover the ultimate cost of claims, especially for those long-tail casualty lines impacted by social inflation. Further adverse development would negatively impact future earnings and could signal that management is still behind the curve on loss trends, raising questions about their forecasting capabilities. That's the big one right now. Then there's catastrophe risk. As a significant property insurer, SIGI is exposed to substantial losses from natural and human-made catastrophic events. Their geographic concentration in the eastern, midwestern, and southwestern U.S. means exposure to a range of severe weather hurricanes, severe convective storms like tornadoes and hail, winter storms. While they use sophisticated modeling and extensive reinsurance to mitigate this risk, a single large event or an aggregation of smaller ones could exceed their protection, leading to significant financial impact. It's always a possibility. We also have market and economic risks. The P&C insurance market is highly competitive, which can pressure pricing and market share, especially as industry profitability recovers and others try to gain share. An economic downturn could also negatively impact premium growth as clients' revenues decline and potentially affect investment returns if interest rates fall or credit quality deteriorates. Credit and counterparty risk is another factor. SIG transfers significant risk to reinsurers, so there's a risk that a reinsurer could be unable to pay claims, especially after a massive industry loss. It's unlikely with major reinsurers, but it's a risk. Their investment portfolio, though high quality, also faces credit risk from potential bond defaults, though this is minimized by their conservative approach. Finally, operational and cybersecurity risk is growing in importance for everyone, really. As a high-tech company, reliance on sophisticated technology means IT failures, system outages, or cyber attacks could disrupt operations, compromise sensitive customer data, and cause significant financial and reputational damage.
That's a good point, and it raises an important question. How are these risks interconnected? For an insurer, underwriting and reserving risk is absolutely paramount, as misjudging future claims can erode all other strengths and make them vulnerable to other risks down the line. And for a high-tech company like Selective, cyber risk is particularly relevant. A data breach or system failure could directly compromise their sophisticated underwriting tools and digital platforms. That would impact their core competitive advantage and erode agent and customer trust pretty quickly. Understanding these interdependencies is crucial for a complete risk assessment. It's not just about one risk in isolation, but how they can potentially cascade through the business.
Okay, that brings us to our final section, valuation analysis. Given everything we've discussed, their strengths, their challenges, their strategic responses, is SIGI fairly priced in the market today? To help answer that, we've compiled a peer valuation table as of Q3 2025, comparing SIGI to the Hanover, THG, Kinsale Capital Group, KNSL, and the Travelers Companies, TRV. Across several key metrics. Market cap, price to earnings, both trailing and forward, price to book, price to tangible book value, ROE, and dividend yield.
Right, and here's where it gets really interesting, because valuation is truly about balancing all the factors we've discussed, their durable strength, their recent severe challenges, and their future prospects. It's a weighing act. Let's look at the price to earnings PE ratio first. SIGI's trailing 12-month TTM PE ratio is about 12.9x, and its forward PE, looking ahead, is 11.2x. This places it at a modest premium to its direct regional peer, Hanover, 11.4x TTM PE, and the large national carrier, Travelers, 11.7x TTM PE. This slight premium might reflect the market's recognition of SIGI's historically consistent operating performance and strong organic growth prior to 2024. They have a good track record. However, it trades at a significant discount to the high-growth, high-profitability E&S specialist Kinsale, which sits at a lofty 23.3x TTM PE. Now, this discount to Kinsale is entirely expected given Kinsale's consistently superior returns and rapid growth prospects in a very specialized and, frankly, less commoditized market. They're playing a different game. Now let's look at the price to book, PB, and price to tangible book value, PTB ratios. Here, SIG tells a different story. Its PB ratio is about 1.50x. That's a notable discount compared to Hanover, 1.93x, and Travelers, 2.05x. The discount is even more pronounced relative to Kinsale's premium valuation of over 6.0x PB. For you, the listener, the price-to-book multiple is a key valuation metric for insurers because book value essentially represents the net asset value of the company, what it would theoretically be worth if liquidated. A lower PB ratio compared to peers with similar or even lower returns on equity can suggest that the market is pricing in a higher degree of risk or uncertainty regarding the company's ability to generate future profits. In SIGI's case, this lower PB multiple likely reflects investor concerns about the adequacy of its loss reserves and the potential for future underwriting volatility that we've discussed at length. It suggests the market is still skeptical about their ability to fully get ahead of social inflation. Finally, let's consider the historical context and earnings quality. SIGI's current TTM PE ratio of 12.9x is actually significantly compressed from its 12-month average, which was over 24x. This compression is a direct result of the depressed earnings reported in 2024 due to those large reserve charges we keep coming back to. Similarly, its PB ratio has declined from over 2.0x at the end of 2023. The quality of SIGI's recent earnings has clearly been obscured by these significant and arguably non-recurring prior year reserve adjustments. The company's underlying earnings power, which would exclude prior year reserve development and normalize for catastrophe losses, is likely much stronger than its reported GAAP earnings suggest. Management's guidance for a full year 2025 GAAP combined ratio in the range of 97% to 98%, which crucially assumes no further adverse development, points to a substantial rebound in underwriting profitability. If they achieve that, it would translate to a much higher level of earnings per share, implying that the stock's forward-looking PE ratio is actually more attractive than its trailing multiple indicates. The market seems very much focused on that rearview mirror right now.
Right. So the market is clearly weighing those recent challenges heavily, and understandably so. But the forward-looking picture might be quite different if they execute on their plan. Okay, let's bring it all together and circle back to those critical questions we started with. First, what differentiates Sigi from larger national carriers and smaller regional players? The answer really lies in their successful super-regional strategy, powered by their high-tech, high-touch operating model. This creates a highly defensible niche. Against national carriers, Sigi's decentralized field model empowers local underwriters to build deep relationships, offering a nuanced, personalized service that larger, more centralized players struggle to replicate. Against smaller regional players, Sigi has the scale, financial resources, and technological sophistication, including that AI integration that smaller competitors simply can't match. It's a very clever sweet spot they've found. Second, how sustainable is the company's underwriting discipline through cycles? Historically, it's been a core strength, driving years of ROE outperformance. The 2024 adverse development certainly tested this to its limits, no doubt, but the evidence suggests a firm return to discipline. Management's response has been swift and decisive. Aggressive rate increases, tightening underwriting standards, and that difficult decision to shrink the personal lines business to restore profitability. This willingness to prioritize underwriting margin over top-line growth is a strong indicator of a disciplined culture that understands long-term value creation. Third, what is the company's competitive moat and how defensible is it? Their moat is clearly the franchise value of its deeply entrenched independent agent network. This moat is highly defensible because these relationships are built on trust and consistent service over many years, creating high switching costs for agents who value that local connection and expertise. It's difficult and costly for competitors to replicate. And importantly, their high-tech investments actually reinforce this moat. They make it even easier and more efficient for agents to work with Selective, increasing that stickiness and making them an indispensable partner. Finally, how well-positioned is Sigi for the current hard-soft market environment? They appear quite well-positioned, actually. The continued hard market in casualty lines, driven by social inflation, provides the necessary pricing environment for them to push through those substantial rate increases needed to get ahead of loss trends. As property pricing begins to soften, their strong agent relationships and service-oriented value proposition become even more critical for retaining policyholders who value quality over just the lowest price. And of course, their strong recurring investment income acts as a significant financial buffer, allowing them to absorb underwriting volatility while they execute their turnaround strategy.
Exactly. This is truly the core of our deep dive. The ongoing tug of war between their highly predictable and growing investment income stream and their currently volatile and challenged underwriting operations. For you, the listener, understanding these dynamics is paramount because it dictates the rhythm of their profitability and consequently the market's perception of their risk. So what are the primary catalysts for future outperformance or underperformance? The most significant positive catalyst would be a clear and sustained stabilization of casualty loss reserves. That's the big one. If we see one or two consecutive quarters with no material adverse prior year development, that would provide strong evidence that management's reserving and pricing actions have successfully caught up with and moved ahead of the elevated loss cost trends. This would effectively clean their earnings profile, allowing the full benefit of their strong investment income and underlying underwriting profitability to flow to the bottom line. That would likely lead to a significant re-rating of the stock as confidence returns. Conversely, the primary negative catalyst would be the announcement of another significant reserve charge in a future quarter. This would signal that the problem of social inflation is deeper or more persistent than currently understood, and that management remains behind the curve. It would severely damage credibility, raise questions about the ultimate adequacy of reserves, and likely cause the stock's valuation multiple to compress even further. Therefore, the most critical metric for you, the listener, to monitor going forward is not just the headline combined ratio, but specifically that prior year reserve development line item in their financial reports. Its stabilization is the key to unlocking future outperformance for Selective Insurance Group. It's the ultimate report card on their ability to manage future liabilities in this tough environment. #outro.
Wow, what a journey into Selective Insurance Group. We've seen a company with deep roots and a clear vision, navigating an industry that's, well, throwing everything it has at them. From the insidious pressures of social inflation to the increasing unpredictability of changing weather patterns, it's a lot. Their high-tech, high-touch model is a truly fascinating differentiator, carving out that unique niche. And their ongoing battle against those underwriting headwinds, especially those reserve charges, is definitely a story worth watching closely in the coming quarters.
Absolutely. And as we wrap up this deep dive, maybe consider this. In an era of increasing complexity and unpredictability, how much value do you, as an informed observer, place on a company's willingness to make difficult long-term strategic decisions? Even when it means sacrificing short-term gains like top-line growth versus chasing immediate, perhaps unsustainable, market share. And how does a company's ability to seamlessly adapt its touch, its human element to meet evolving tech expectations, truly shape its ultimate resilience and competitive staying power? Something to think about for yourself as you reflect on what we've discussed today.
Great final thought. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive. We hope you feel a little more well-informed and perhaps a little more curious about the intricate world of insurance and beyond. We'll catch you on the next one.